strap on the boots and scrape up the knuckles.
Oh, what a hit!
He got jacked.
This is the Big Red Raider. Presented by Santan Ford in Gilbert.
Murray's going to score. Touchdown. Throws end zone for Fitz. Goes up and makes the game-winning catch. Larry Legend does it again.
The Rage is brought to you by Santan Ford in Gilbert. Are you Santan Ford? State Farm. Talk to an agent today at 800-STATE-FARM. And by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcasts.
The Red Sea is rising up.
Temperature rising, vision blurring, rage taking over.
From the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center.
Hey guys, where else would you rather be?
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get the popcorn ready. It's going to be a show.
And Ron Wolfley.
It doesn't get any better than that.
Unleash the fury!
Hey, you know who's been around longer in Cardinals Nation than number 11? It's not actually a who, it's more like a what. You know what's got more tenure than the future first ballot Hall of Fame receiver, Ron Wolfley?
What's that, Paulie?
You know who goes 60 minutes every stinking week, more weeks in a row than Larry Fitzgerald?
Who's that, Paulie?
The original Thursday Night Football, the Big Red Rage. Just saying, Larry, we're in season 19.
How about that?
So you can have season 17 all you want. We're in 19 over here, and you know, we've got quite a track record of durability.
Paulie, we're not actually, though, not you and I. This is season number 15, correct?
Wolf, what are you doing?
This is 15,
we're
right?
We're talking trash on Larry here. Oh, what are you doing right
I
now?
I see what you're
Larry's
saying.
Larry's not Paulie. Aware that we haven't okay, done every single season. He doesn't know that. I'm talking about the Big Red Rage in general.
19 seasons.
That's right.
Of Big Red Rage, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. How's that taste, Fitz?
Right here, right now. Does Larry Fitzgerald get to season 19?
Paulie,
I want it.
What are you doing? You are so greedy.
Out of
greed
the gates
is not good.
On the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. Welcome in. We are Santan Ford. Paul Calvisi, Ron Wolfley, soon to be joined by Cardinals insider Darren Urban. I'm buying you time to answer the question. Will there be a season 19
Why are
for
you
number 11?
He's going into season number 17, Paulie.
I've correct? Got a prediction.
How in the world are you saying that Larry Fitzgerald, why would you do that? Why would you go there, Paul, and start talking about season 19? He hasn't even played season 17.
The way that he's morphed from the one-trick pony, as so-called by Todd Haley, and what was really a catalyst for yards after catch in his career. Think of Larry then. Think of Larry now in week 16, trucking KJ Wright. At the goal line.
Yes.
Now, think of Larry in about 2 years as the metabolism continues to slow down and maybe adds a few LBs. And by that point, I'm thinking Cliff Kingsbury, as he continues to evolve, the offense will probably be dressed in six tight ends on game day. What if Larry's a tight end by season 19?
Yeah, I don't think so, Paul. No, I don't like that at all right there.
I mean
this is a guy who's going to play wide receiver. You know, it's just kind of like you when I was ripping you for having the Brillo hair.
Okay.
When I was ripping you over and over for having the Brillo pad.
There's no
hair,
connection
Paulie.
Or application here.
I mean, honestly, think of the way that propelled you in your broadcast
okay.
career.
Right. That's. I hope that's a stretch. I hope that's a reach. That's all I have to say. So Larry's back. We'll get into that in depth momentarily. But more positive news. How about Chandler Jones as I tee you up?
You know, just honestly, the defensive player of the year, ladies and gentlemen, in the NFC, Chandler Jones. Are you kidding me right now? Do you have any idea when you're on a 5'10 and one team, how difficult that is, Paulie? Do you have any idea when you're not in a top 10 defense, let's put it that way, how difficult that is to actually be voted that?
You know, in two ways. A, to get the votes like you said, but B, to put up the numbers to garner the votes when you're playing from behind so often, as opposed to a 12-4 team where you always
saying?
Have the lead and you can pin your ears back. It can generate a lot of garbage sacks and garbage time because offenses are one-dimensional. That didn't happen to Chandler Jones this year.
Paulie, you're saying that teams were running the ball? Is that it in the fourth quarter? They were running the ball, a lot of these guys? Of course they were,
yes,
right?
They were.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
So props to Chandler Jones. We'll see if that results in the ultimate Defensive Player of the Year award comes Super Bowl weekend in the official league-wide designation. We'll get into that. We'll get into the return of Larry Fitzgerald and much more. We'll get into championship weekend, AFC, NFC, just getting rolling on the Big Red Rage presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. We are Santan Ford.
Murray rolls to the right, throws near side to Fitz, caught, and he's into the end zone for the touchdown. Fitz is wide open, caught at the 50. There's the big play, 30, and he's tripped up and tackled at the 25. Quick pass left side to Larry, one-handed attempt. He juggled it, and then he caught it.
Larry batted the ball with one hand to himself, so he could catch it.
Murray looking, throws a deep ball left side for Fitz, who got turned around. Oh, he caught it, though, at the 25-yard line. Fires to Fitz, and the left side is wide open for the touchdown. Quick throw to the right, flat to Fitz. Caught at the 2, and he's in. Touchdown. Larry Fitzgerald.
In wide receiver from Pittsburgh, number 11, Larry Fitzgerald.
Just a small highlight montage of the 2019 campaign for the Arizona Cardinals' leading receiver yet again, Mr. Number 2 all-time in league history in receptions, number 2 all-time in league history in receiving yards, 6th all-time in receiving touchdowns. That would be Larry Fitzgerald. This would be the Big Red Rage presented by Santan Ford in Gilbert. We are Santan Ford. And we are Paul Calvisi, Ron Wolfley, and Darren Urban, Cardinals insider from azcardinals.com, joining us. And it's getting to be a thing, Darren. Every offseason, seemingly now, it's where were you when the news came out that Larry Fitzgerald was returning for the next season? What says you?
Where was I?
Where were you? I know exactly where I was when the news came down this week.
So do I, because I knew it was coming and I was posting a story it would come out.
Look at that. Wow. Yeah, a little flexing over there.
A little bit. You just teed me up on that.
Darren,
where was I?
I mean, I was knowledge of the story.
I was pushing a button that said, hey, he's back.
Yeah, see, there's a need-to-know basis, and apparently we don't need to know these things like Darren does.
Yeah.
It's amazing how that works.
So where were you, Paulie? Go ahead and tell us your story.
I had just gotten out of the booth on KTAR, and the news came down. I'm like, why didn't it come down 30 seconds earlier?
Right.
And I had to tear everything up, literally. I'm like, okay, well, everything I had in the hopper for the rest of the morning in the sportscast and Paul's call, everything's out the window because Larry didn't check with me to give me a little forewarning like apparently Darren got news.
I will admit that I was listening to Doug and Wolf as they were coming, and I realized they were going to go to break right when that was going to drop, and that's basically exactly what happened.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, the news came down. Blew me away, man. What great news. If you're in the Red Sea, if you're an Arizona Cardinals fan, are you kidding me? Larry Fitzgerald is coming back. What great news that is.
Did it really blow you away, though? I mean, maybe when it happened?
Not this year.
Okay.
Not this year.
That's right.
But maybe the early – does it keep getting earlier, the decision?
It was earlier this year than it had been, yes.
It seems to coincide.
So that is a fact, Darren. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it is a fact.
That is a fact right there. All right, ding, I was right on that ball.
But it seems to correlate, correct me if I'm wrong, and I know you will, with his golf plans, that he doesn't want to meet the golf media and have to answer all the questions with it still being an unknown and getting peppered with the follow-up questions. And, geez, Larry, what are you going to do? And what's your future? And he doesn't like all that. So he tries to get the news out before he gets out in public again.
I was going to say, it never stopped him previously. I mean, right. I remember one year when he played in the Pro-Am
at the Phoenix Open,
and was around him all day. And he basically, he had somewhere to go, catch a plane. I think he was going to the Super Bowl, but he hustled off, didn't talk to anybody, and basically me and a Cardinals camera person ran after him, basically said, come on, give us 2 quotes, which were nothing because he wasn't going to say anything anyways.
See, and I think that was a turning point. He didn't want to deal with that ever again. Yeah. He said to himself, I'm going to make this a known before I play in these golf tournaments.
I will tell you right now, I was a little concerned, and the only reason why I say that is because going into the last 3 seasons, BA's last year, of course, Steve Wilks, of course, in year number 2, and now coming into this past season, I thought for sure this was going to be it. Going into the last 3, I thought this was going to be it for Larry Fitzgerald. At some point in time, that's going to be it right there, and he's going to retire, right? Well, he didn't retire, as we all know. This year, I felt like there's no way he's going to retire. There's no way. He's coming back. There's no way he's going to retire, and that did put me on edge just a little bit, might I say.
All right, so while Wolf was overthinking it, there's Larry. He's at the Diamond LPGA Tournament of Champions in Orlando, and he was literally between shots out on the course, and the Golf Channel caught up with him, stuck a mic in his face, and asked him, what drove you to resign?
Level of competition, you know, is the highest levels, and, you know, to be able to go out there and compete with, you know, some really good guys on my team, be coached by some wonderful coaches, and our franchise is in great hands. We drafted Kyler Murray last year, the first overall pick, and, you know, he's a stud. He's going to be a special player for years to come, so playing receiver with him makes it easy.
Yes, Wolf, you got scooped by the LPGA, just to let you know over there. Larry's first words on coming back for 2020. And
he had the golf talk going on there, didn't he, right there?
Well, if you're on the course, you
exactly. He just wanted to keep his voice down. Very interesting right there.
See, two things. One, I don't think he minds the grind, which is a big reason why he's back. A lot of guys, you tell me, Wolf, you know, you get to the end of your career and game days are great. It's the Monday through Saturday that gets to be torture for some guys.
I just honestly think that he's addicted to competitiveness and competition, and I think he's addicted to production. I kid you not. You take those two things right there. As long as he is productive and continues to produce, especially to the degree in which he did this past year for the Arizona Cardinals, leading the team in receptions and receiving yards, I would say that's pretty doggone good right there. Still productive, even at his age right now. As long as he's productive, as long as he's healthy and he's competing, I don't think he's going to retire. I don't think he's going to retire until that happens.
And you know what? After you just went through two straight years of a brand new head coach, a brand new offense, a brand new rookie quarterback. Why not benefit? Why not benefit from Kyler Murray coming back? You know the offense. Cliff Kingsbury knows the NFL. If you think, and the numbers say, there's a real good chance this Cardinals offense could surge in 2020, why not benefit from that sort of production? And Larry was asked just about playing for Cliff Kingsbury and what he knows so far.
You know, he's not one of those coaches that has a system that this is the way we do it. And whatever guys do well, he puts you in position to be successful. You know, he came in with the air raid and we ended up morphing into more of a, you know, a 12 personnel run first team. And like, it wasn't any problem with him. He was receptive to whatever it took to win. And, you know, I just love him as personality. He makes a really great fun atmosphere every single day. But, you know, challenges you mentally and physically to get better.
Darren, you know him as well as anybody. Why? Why do you think he's back for yet another season, his 17th campaign?
I wrote about this on azcardinals.com. I think there's multiple reasons. I agree with Wolf. I think that he absolutely enjoys the competition. I think he enjoys the camaraderie of the locker room. I one of the things I noted was, you know, there's so few things in somebody's life that would allow you to do what you're doing in the locker room and being a part of that group. And you're as a professional athlete, you're making a ton of money, and don't ever doubt that the $11 million is a big part of this. He's not coming back for $2 million.
I forgot to mention that.
But you live this dream as a professional athlete, and why would you want to let that go if you don't have to? You know, you're around guys you like hanging out with. You're part of this group that not many people get to be a part of. And when you walk away from it, and Wolf obviously can talk to, when you walk away from that, you're losing a piece of yourself. And I think he understands, you know, I like the idea, speaking as Fitz, I like the idea of I'm about to turn 37 and these guys can make me feel 21 still. Because I know as somebody who's older than 37, I wish I could feel 21.
I'm going to go back to training camp, though, guys. I'm going to go back to training camp and sitting there having a conversation with Larry Fitzgerald. And Larry literally said, you know what, honestly, I am so energized in this offense. I love this offense. I believe in this kid, Kyler Murray. I believe that there's 80, 85, maybe even 90 catches in this offense. I mean, he honestly was excited, seriously excited to play in this offense. And I think his belief in Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray only got stronger as the season unfolded.
And you're a made man. You walk around and you know you can tackle like a Corey Peters and try and wrestle him to the ground, and the former state heavyweight champion in wrestling knows he can only do so much because you can't hurt the franchise. You know, it's good to be Larry when you're going into your 17th season.
It's good to be the king.
It is. Big Red Rage, back right after this, presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert.
Palmer takes the snap, play action pass. Palmer setting up, he's in trouble, he's hit, gets out of there, rolls right, throws back to the left. Fitz is wide open, caught at the 35, nobody's there. He's at the 40, at the 50, turns upfield at the 45, at the 40, 35, stiff arms 30, 25, 20. Fitz to the near side, 10, to the 5, and tackled there. Carson Palmer somehow got out of trouble.
Oh, baby, Carson Palmer doing a whirly bird in the pocket. And saw Larry Fitzgerald on the other side of the field, and then Larry Fitzgerald, the legend, took over and did the rest.
Second down and goal at the 5. They can win it with a touchdown. Snap to Palmer, rolls out, and it's a pitch to Fitz, running straight ahead into the end zone. The shovel pass for the touchdown and the win. The Cardinals advance to the NFC Championship game on a shovel pass, of all things, in one of the craziest games ever. Cardinals win it in overtime, 26-20.
Put your hands in the air and step away from the football. Larry Fitzgerald on the shuttle pass. What an incredible call.
What a great call on the Cardinals radio network. You guys should be proud of yourselves. I mean, that still gives me chills from the 2015 postseason, a divisional win against the Green Bay Packers in overtime.
You know me, Paulie. I don't sit there and say, oh, what a great call that was by the coach, right? What great, because I think it's so overrated for the most part. That call may have been BA's finest moment.
Carson's call. Remember Carson on All or Nothing?
Yeah, but didn't he ask him?
I think he said, what do you think we should do? Didn't Carson say, why don't we?
I think so, but then BA said they've been practicing it every Friday for 2 years.
Right.
And so the two of them sort of looked at each other, and it was a great call. But you know my favorite
great
part of that?
Call.
The whole montage. And look, when you have a name like Larry Legend, and welcome back into the Big Red Rage presented by Santan, Ford, and Gilbert, the name Larry Legend, to me, starts with the postseason and what he has done in his career in the playoffs. But the best part of all that was the no-look stiff arm. I still love the no-look stiff. Boom! Just in a boom, just out of nowhere, he stiff arms the Packer. Just out.
The guy didn't even know what hit him.
It's like he had one of those Tour de France sort of rear-view mirrors attached to his helmet. You could see the guy in the rear-view, and just boom, just gave him the quick stiff arm, and down he went, and Larry went another 20 yards, part of the 75-yard catch and run. And Carson Palmer probably doesn't get enough credit for spinning out of trouble and finding Larry wide open in the left flat.
Did he see him right there? You know what, honestly, though? Big-time players make big-time plays in big-time games. Isn't that right, Gene Stallings? And that's what Gene Stallings always used to say. And those two guys combined right there for a big-time moment.
And it's one of the reasons he goes by a first-name basis with the state of Arizona. You say Larry, everyone knows who you're talking about. Even his teammates acknowledge it, recognize it, admire it. How about Justin Pugh on the Big Red Rage, guest of DJ Humphries recently, and we asked about Larry, and he talked about how he's one of the best teammates he's ever had.
When you think of an all-time great, when you think of one of the best teammates we've ever played with, I think Larry Fitzgerald's there. He knows everyone's kids' names. He knows what your dog's name is. He knows what you had for breakfast. And it goes down, and it just goes to show you, he takes the time out to have a conversation. Me personally, I mean, he helped me get trees for my house. Just landscaping needs. Larry Fitzgerald does it all.
You need a plumber? Larry's got a guy. I mean, he's just got this network. Now, sometimes, Darren, as you know, in the locker room, because Larry can be an instigator of sorts.
Yeah, don't say.
And when he has inside knowledge about you and, some of your personality traits, family members, sometimes that can work against you. You know, knowledge is power, and Larry knows that.
I've been there before, too. I remember he's asked me about my salary before, that kind of stuff. There was a couple times this season, too. I mean, he does that. On Thursdays, he meets with the media in front of his locker, and it's always the biggest crowd in the locker room at any point. And he's doing he'll be talking, and there was at least two or three times. I think he did it once to Sherfield and once to Kirk, and where he put him on blast in front of the cameras about girlfriends or alleged girlfriends, which I do not think those guys really loved. And then, of course, there was the one time with Andy Isabella calling him out for not going to the basketball game. Yeah. So,
and there was another time with Andy Isabella before he met the media where he stuffed Andy Isabella in a locker.
Also true.
And you can find that somewhere on azcardinals.com, because he asked our camera guys to actually roll on it and film it, because I guess Andy had it coming, because he had the audacity to return a prank and tackle Paulie. Larry during practice, according to sources, and you knew that wasn't going to stand.
A rookie always has it coming, Paul.
Right.
Always.
Yeah. But honestly, he is such a player coach at this point in his career in so many ways, and you see him with the young guys. Even second-year guy Christian Kirk, we asked him, remember Wolf on the Big Red Rage, just how helpful Larry has been on and off the field.
Literally everything, whether it's investing your money, how to dress, which restaurant you should go to, how to travel, this is what you car you should get, lease it, buy it, find it. Like, it's everything. But, you know, he's so good, you know, on the field, you know, especially with, you know, all the rookies that we have, you know, in our room this year with, you know, Andy, Keyshawn and Hakeem. And, you know, we're all young players. And, you know, he's just so good to have there on a daily basis and just to watch him practice and just his presence being around, even if he's not saying anything, you know, just picking up on the little things.
I think it was 2 years ago, I was in the locker room, and there was a young running back, and he had a form, and it had his info on it. It had his address, had some other billing info, and the kid threw it in the recycling bin. And Larry walked over and grabbed it out of the recycling bin and said, have you ever heard of identity theft? And he tore it up, and he put half of it in one garbage can and half of it in another garbage can. He's always teaching these guys.
You know, on that note right there, guys, too, it's kind of like, remember when you were walking through the park with your dad when you were like 5 years old, right? You're holding your dad's hand when you were 5 years old. You're walking through the park right here. The comfort and the strength that you actually got from that. I honestly believe that Larry Fitzgerald walking around a locker room, especially in that wide receivers room where there are so many young guys right now, it's a very comforting. He provides aid, comfort, and shelter to some of these young pups that are trying to find their way in the National Football League. It's the intangibles of Larry Fitzgerald. It's not just the tangibles, as we all know. It's not just the receptions, not just the yards, not just the touchdowns. It's the intangibles of Larry Fitzgerald that make him the great player and the Hall of Fame player that he is.
You know, you go to Seattle every year, and typically it's late in the year, and you got a lot of young guys, and they had never experienced Seattle. And they look at Larry. They look at Larry for the guidance. You walk into that, and all the 12s are yelling at you, and they're barking and heckling, and Larry just sets a tone. It's not unlike what Kurt Warner did in the postseason, 2008, the Super Bowl run, where as they got deeper and deeper into the playoffs, everyone kept looking at Kurt Warner for that guidance and that leadership because he had been the guy who'd been there and done that, and that was so invaluable to that team. Everyone relied on him and said, okay, you know what? Kurt's going to guide us. He's been here.
There's been plenty of people as the news came out that Larry was coming back. Of course, you get the initial enthusiasm about that. But there are a handful of people. OK, what's he going to make? Then you find out it's $11 million again, which is what he's made the last 3-4 years, whatever it's been. And there are fans out there that are disappointed that they're saying at this point in his career, Fitz shouldn't be making as much money. He should take a little less and maybe you spread it around, get a better free agent, whatever you want to say. But it's the stuff you guys are talking about is one of the reasons he's getting paid the way he is. And, you know, I've said this other stuff before. It's what he's doing in the locker room. It's the aid, comfort, and shelter he's giving to teammates. It's the million-watt smile he's flashing when he goes to charity events and making kids that maybe aren't all that well off feel a little bit better for that hour because they're around Larry Fitzgerald. And not only are they around a legendary athlete, but he's making them feel like he wants to be there. I've been in places where you can put a star athlete in a charity situation or a public situation, and they're there and people are happy to see them, but the body language isn't quite what you'd hope for. You can kind of tell they're there because they need to be there. And Larry always acts like he wants to be there, and I think that's a big deal.
And let me also say this right here, because I think his biggest impact will be on Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray, it's so important that he develops as a leader and he learns to be that leader. What I love about this is Kyler Murray could develop at his own pace last year, right? And this year, coming back now, suddenly Larry Fitzgerald is going to be back in that locker room. Kyler Murray can continue to develop as a leader without forcing the issue. I have to lead because I'm the quarterback of this team. Larry Fitzgerald is no longer walking around the locker. I cannot tell you how important I think that is, that Kyler finds his stride as a leader with the aid, comfort, and shelter of having a Larry Fitzgerald as the team captain on the offensive side of the ball.
And by the way, you're in week 17. It's the final Friday practice, and he dives for a ball. A meaningless ball in practice before a meaningless game to end the season. That sets a tone for the entire team as we continue with the Big Red Rage.
Shotgun snap to Murray. He's back to throw, looking, fires deep, near side. It is caught by Isabel at the 30, near side 40, cuts back, middle of the field at the 50. He's got speed at the 40, at the 30, at the 25, at the 20, the 15, the 10, the 5. Touchdown, Andy Isabella. It's an 88-yard catch and run by the rookie.
and the Cardinals are in business with 4:53 to go.
Kyler Murray takes a shot down the field over the shoulder. Andy Isabella catches it, and you're not going to catch the 4-3-1, baby. That is lightning in a jar.
First career touchdown for Andy Isabella.
That was at home against the Niners. To me, there was sort of three plays in one. There was the catch. It was a nice snag over the shoulder near the sideline. And then there was the elusiveness to escape the DBs in the area. And then there was the finishing speed. He gone as he goes 88 yards to the house. There's your second-round rookie receiver, Andy Isabella. This is the Big Red Rage. Paul Calvisi, Ron Wolfley, and Darren Urban. Thing is, you didn't see enough of that from Andy Isabella in year number one. And it was interesting, Darren. I think for at least half the season, did they not sort of struggle to find where's the best spot for Andy Isabella? We saw him outside. We saw him in motion. We didn't see him necessarily on a lot of the play, you know, the offensive sets at times. It just, what was his role? Where was he best served? And even Cliff Kingsbury mentioned more than once, didn't he, that they finally started to realize the best way to utilize him.
I would say yes with a caveat. I mean, I would almost say it went the whole season. I mean, the last game of the year, he was active and didn't play a snap. So obviously they hadn't figured out enough.
True.
So I think that is a paramount going into this offseason with these rookie receivers and especially Andy Isabella. We can sit here all day and say, okay, once they're here, it doesn't matter where they're drafted, yada, yada, yada. It does matter where they're drafted. It does matter you spend a second-round pick on them. DK Metcalf is doing what he's doing in Seattle. You've got to see what you have in this guy that you spent important draft capital on, and you have to figure out how you're going to do it. And obviously we're talking about Fitz earlier. I think Fitz works a little bit better in the slot himself. Does that stunt what you might want to do with Andy Isabella? I think there's a lot of questions there.
You know, I love the fact that Christian Kirk was telling the truth. He was talking about how Andy Isabella is always going to be compared, right? Somebody asked him a question about how Andy Isabella is always going to be compared to DK Metcalf. And I loved what Christian Kirk said. Yeah, he is. You got to know that. That's just the way that it goes. I'm paraphrasing exactly what he said, but I love that because honesty is what you need to do. If you're a player, you need to look at yourself honestly. And if you're going to get better, if you're going to acknowledge something actually besets you or an obstacle is in your way, you've got to be able to acknowledge it first before you can actually whip it. And Andy Isabella needs to whip that obstacle in front of him right now and develop as a receiver and get better.
So how would we define that exactly? Well, Cliff Kingsbury gave a little bit of insight towards the end of the season, talking about the young receivers in general, not just Andy Isabella, Keyshawn Johnson, Akeem Butler going forward. He missed this season with injury. Here's the head coach.
Young players learn how to be consistent in everything they do, and what we teach in practice, being able to apply it week in and week out on the field, because at this level, doing your own thing just doesn't work. No matter how fast you are, how quick you are, how good your hands are, if you don't have a consistent approach and a plan each and every week, I think they found out that it's tough sledding, and that's something. Talent's not an issue, but I think those guys will mature a lot in the offseason and come back a lot better players.
Doing your own thing doesn't work, quote unquote. Can we go from media to football translation dictionary? How would you read that comment?
Well, I mean, that's hard to know. Obviously he's clearly referring to things. And I was actually the one who asked the question because I wanted to write a story about this, which I did a couple weeks ago on azcardinals.com. But I was expecting something more vague, to be honest. I mean, for Cliff Kingsbury, that was a pretty pointed comment that he wasn't usually doing most of the season. And it will be interesting. You mentioned Christian Kirk, Wolf. I pulled him aside to ask him some questions about that. And he basically, I said, what advice are you giving these guys, these three rookies? And he basically said, you know, he said, first of all, I told him to take some time off because you got to recharge. But he goes, after that, he goes, you have to make a decision on whether you're just going to be a role player or if you want to be a guy. And I think there is a decision that has to be made. I mean, you've now seen what this is like. And everybody says the second offseason after that rookie year going into that second season is the most important thing. So now we need to see how motivated these guys are to take a step forward. And I think with each of the three, I think that remains to be seen.
And guess what? We found out, and Larry spoke of it, that the head coach will use his assets the way he sees fit. And if you're not producing, he'll go in a different direction. The season might have started with a lot of 10 personnel, 4 and 5 wide receiver sets. But if all those receivers aren't being productive, guess what? There's going to be a game where I dress 4 tight ends, mm-hmm. and we're going to run the ball for 253 yards. So with that, and as Darren said, if these rookie receivers as second-year receivers don't produce, they yeah. won't find themselves dressed on game day.
I just wonder how that's going to impact the draft going forward, right? I mean, obviously, best player available. That's what we're going to have, best player available. That's what we know. Everybody says best player available. But it's just so funny because if suddenly you have 2 all-pro guards, you never draft a guard. No. You never draft a guard, even though he might be the best player available. Or maybe you're loaded at tight end. For whatever reason, you never draft a tight end, even though it's best player available. You have to take some of that into account. You have to. What do you have here? I do believe the Arizona Cardinals, I could see this strategy happening right here. If you've got tiers and you've got an Isaiah Simmons on the same tier as a Jerry Jeudy, let's just say that, or maybe a CeeDee Lamb, same tier. Now all of a sudden you've got to bring philosophy into it to break the tie. You've got to bring philosophy into it and say, you know what, honestly, we think that our offense is going to be so special. We're going to double down on the offense, as a matter of fact. We're going to go out with Kyler Murray, Cliff Kingsbury, and we're going to double down with Christian Kirk, Larry Fitzgerald, and another wide receiver. Could that possibly happen? I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
I wouldn't doubt that they could end up going offense there, but I'm going to tell you, in your scenario, if they have Jerry Jeudy and Isaiah Simmons rated the same, I'm absolutely taking the defensive player, no questions asked, at least at 8. I understand what your concept mm-hmm. is, and that makes a lot of sense. But I feel like this offense was able to do enough with what they already had. And I'm assuming they're going to get some other pieces besides the first round pick that they can add to it. And I think you can get this defense just to average, then you got a much better chance to moving forward. And I think you need a defensive playmaker like that in your scenario.
Yeah, absolutely. I like the idea of surrounding Kyler Murray with young offensive talent just like himself to grow with, right? Where you could take the defensive side of the ball and use a lot of that free agent money that you have right there, right? Maybe populate it with that.
I could see that.
Okay. And if you made some significant improvements and investments on defense and free agency, absolutely. At the same time, this draft is loaded with receivers. Mm-hmm. Some mock drafts have 8 receivers going in the first round.
But if you think one receiver is different than all the others.
If you have the next Fitz or Julio Jones sitting there, I would agree. If you're thinking this guy is a difference maker for a decade. Hey, Darren, thanks for the insight.
Yep.
Thanks for keeping Wolf honest over there.
Thanks, Derb.
It's the
Fact Checker.
Big Red Rage presented by Santan, Ford, and Gilbert. Back right after this.
Garoppolo comes up in the victory formation. He takes the snap. He drops down to a knee. And this game is over. For the first time since the 2013 season, the San Francisco 49ers will play in the NFC Championship game. A dominating victory today. They beat the Minnesota Vikings 27-10.
He takes the snap. He falls to a knee. The bench is empty. The snow is falling and Green Bay won. The Packers have won, and they will take their record into the home of the San Francisco 49ers for the NFC Championship game next Sunday.
The calls on Westwood One. Welcome back into the Big Red Rage. Paul Calvisi, Ron Wolfley, thanks to Darren Urban. And here's a little factoid for D. Herb. This is going to be the third time in this Super Bowl era that both teams in the conference title game had losing records the previous season.
Wow.
Hashtag foreshadowing, maybe for another team that seemed to turn it on towards the end of the season. If you're looking for a reason to be bullish on next year, and I'm not sitting here forecasting an NFC championship game, but look at the turnarounds that are possible. Look at the Niners a year ago when they were 4-12, and they had injuries, including Jimmy G. Look at the Packers a year ago, 6-9-1, and now they have won 6 straight since they lost to the Niners in the regular season, and they're right back in the NFC Championship game.
See, that is the one thing about the National Football League, right? It's one of the reasons why I think it is as popular popular as it is, especially if you're in a fan base that has struggled, right? Hey, don't worry about it. You can go worst to first. You can do it in a year. We see it happen all the time. Now, I'm not saying the Green Bay Packers were the worst. I'm not saying that. But we do know this. The San Francisco 49ers, where did they draft last year, Paul?
Number two, as a matter of fact.
Yep. Right now, of course, they lost Jimmy G right there, but still, it's an amazing thing, the National Football League and the game of football in and of itself, where you can go worst to first, and I believe that that gives a lot of fan bases hope, and hope is so critical.
We mentioned the Packers have won six straight since that loss to the Niners. They didn't just lose. They got dominated. They lost 37-8. And after the game, Aaron Rodgers walked up to Jimmy G at midfield and said, quote, "We'll see you later on." Well, that was prophetic. How much do you think that game plays into this game, where you get absolutely trucked by an opponent? The Niners had their way, especially with that Green Bay offensive line. And we know the Niners just set a record. The first time ever a team had five first-round picks in a playoff game all get sacks in a playoff game. Think about that. And then think about this matchup this time around. How do you think that carries over and plays into it, if at all?
I really don't think it's going to, Bully. You know, honestly, if in fact you're going to go into a game and you're going to have a game plan and your game plan is going to be to run the ball, that's what you're going to do. You may do it differently, but I think strategically, on the strategic level, which says what you're going to do, I really don't think it's going to impact it that much right here, right? I mean, there might be some surprises, but for the most part, this is going to be an excellent game because I believe it's going to be won or lost on the line of scrimmage. The one thing the Green Bay Packers don't get enough credit for, as far as I'm concerned, is their rushing attack, right? What a great job they do running the ball, in particular using that outside zone, that tackle zone play that so many teams love to use, including the Tennessee Titans. They love using that play right there. And the Green Bay Packers are very, very good at it. And by the way, Aaron Rodgers, excellent on the bootleg off of it.
Yeah, if you want to know the difference in an improved Aaron Rodgers this year, how about Aaron Jones? The running back in the run game, a quarterback's best friend. Yeah, that they truly have had a balanced offense.
Yeah, he runs that play, the tackle zone again, the outside zone. Aaron Jones runs that play better than anybody in the league, maybe save for Todd Gurley or maybe Derrick Henry.
So I grew up in the Bay Area, and I have all these buddies, really annoying right now, that now that the Niners are winning and going to the NFC Championship game, and these guys are texting me, and they're talking trash, and they're asking me the following question. Hey, Paulie, what's our weakness? What's our weakness? They like to think that their Niners team is the most complete team in the NFL. What would be your answer to that? Because the Cardinals obviously play them twice every year, and they played them tough, one possession losses each of the two games.
I'm going to say Jimmy G. That's what I'm going to say right there is Jimmy G. No, again, I'm not a Jimmy G hater by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not, but I do believe that when Jimmy G, when you get in his face, when you bloody his nose a little bit, when you pressure him, I think he's going to make some bad decisions. And I think he will throw you the ball. I think Kirk Cousins is very, very similar. The same type of quarterback right there. That's the knock on Jimmy G. When you listen to defensive coordinators on the inside, I'm talking about the grapevine, Paulie. I'm not talking about on ESPN, not talking on some national network. Yeah. I'm talking about the grapevine. When you listen to these guys, these coaches talk about Jimmy G, that is common knowledge. That's what they talk about. You got to rough him up and see how he throws the ball because maybe he'll throw it to you.
So the first time around, Aaron Rodgers had 104 yards passing. That's it. He got sacked five times. He got hit about 500 times. How much more equipped is Green Bay to keep that vaunted defensive front of the Niners off their Pro Bowl quarterback?
It's a great question, Paulie. We're going to find out. We're all going to have a front row seat. But I will tell you this, too. I wonder if Jimmy G feels any pressure looking across the way and seeing Aaron Rodgers. Because after all, it is quarterback on quarterback crime, is it not?
And remember, the Niners passed on Aaron Rodgers, and he has admitted he never forgot about that. This is what he's been waiting his whole career for. The hometown team that passed him over in the draft? We'll see. Back with more on the Big Red Rage.
Tannehill takes a snap down to a right knee. And the Baltimore Ravens, who were the number one seed for the first time in franchise history, have a short-lived party at that spot as they get dropped by the Tennessee Titans 28-12.
The final knee is taken, and the AFC Championship game is set. It'll be Kansas City and Tennessee next Sunday, Arrowhead Stadium.
with a trip to the Super Bowl on the line. 51-31. Kansas City comes back from 24 down to win it.
How about the calls on Westwood 1 from 24-0 down in that game to a 51-7 run to end the game? How about a Houston Texans team that was up 24-0 and lost by 20? And now you have KC advancing to the AFC Championship game on the Big Red Rage.
What was incredible about that, Paulie, again, like you said, here are the Texans. They get up by 24 in the first quarter. And by the end of the second quarter, end of only the second, not the end of the game, end of the second quarter, the Chiefs were up by 4. Are you kidding me? You come back from down 24 and you do it in a quarter. Mm. Does that sound like the Kansas City Chiefs? Yes.
And for all that, I'm still more intrigued by the Tennessee Titans. The Titans are trying to become the third team since 1990 to beat the top three seeds in the single postseason. They would join the 2005 Steelers and the 2010 Packers, who, by the way, both won the Super Bowl as six seeds. How equipped is Tennessee to go in against a Kansas City defense that most likely might be without Pro Bowl defensive tackle Chris Jones?
Wow.
And continue a rushing attack that's basically rewriting the record books right now.
You know what, Paulie? Honestly, I think it's the key to victory, of course, for the Tennessee Titans, and nobody's going to be shocked or surprised by that right there. Least of all, I think the Kansas City Chiefs. I think they're going to jam up the box. They know what's coming. It's going to be an awful lot of Derrick Henry. Guess what? Mike Vrabel. Paul, did Mike Vrabel actually play for the New England Patriots? Did he play for the Patriots?
Yes,
Paul?
Indeed.
Did he actually play for Bill Belichick when he was there at the Patriots?
Many years.
Okay, does he talk to Bill Belichick? Of course he talks to Bill Belichick. Are you kidding me? As a matter of fact, he considers him to be a mentor coach. What did the New England Patriots do to the Kansas City Chiefs last year? What did they do last season? They got into 21 personnel. That's what they did, Paul. They got into 21 personnel, and they rammed it right down the throats of the Kansas City Chiefs. Guess what the Tennessee Titans are built to do? They're built to pull an upset in this game. If their defense just shows up a little where they don't give up 51 points, if they can keep Patrick Mahomes, if they can keep him actually on the sideline with all of that talent, with all of that skill, while Derrick Henry continues to grind the clock, time of possession, in this game, it matters. Everyone else will tell you, oh, no, it's points per possession. Don't worry about time of possession. You know what? In this game, it matters. Move the chains, pound the Kansas City Chiefs right in the face, and by the second quarter, maybe they snap, and maybe you can actually pull an upset. That's the key to beating the Kansas City Chiefs, and it's the only way I think they can beat them.
And guess what? Tennessee has already beaten KC earlier this year. In fact, the Chiefs have won seven straight. Their last loss was to Tennessee, and that was a game where Derrick Henry ran for 188 yards and had two touchdowns.
Well, Paul, I may have cheated and looked, all right?
Okay, so think about this, and this is what I enjoy about the Titans, is the fact that you have Ryan Tannehill, who came out of nowhere from the Dolphins, and he's leading this team into the AFC Championship game, and he's doing so by having the best passer rating of any quarterback in the regular season, 117.5, yet he hasn't thrown for 100 yards this postseason. Think about that.
I didn't know you could have a quarterback rating over 100 and haven't
that
thrown.
Was the regular season.
Oh, I see.
But in the postseason, he has not thrown for more than 100 yards. Can he get away with that against Kansas City? I mean, think about it. They just beat New England's defense.
Yes.
They just beat Baltimore's defense.
Yes.
Kansas City's defense was ranked 26th in the league in the regular season in rush D, and they're minus the Pro Bowl D tackle, Chris Jones, most likely.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, Paulie. I think they can do that. I think they can line up. It's the weakness of the Kansas City Chiefs. It has been. But try to keep in mind this right here. The Kansas City Chiefs' defense is actually built off their offense. That is huge. There's a huge difference right there, Paulie. Most general managers will look at they'll look at their offense and they'll look at their defense and say, well, this is the offense we're building. Well, this is the defense we're building right here, right? This is our defensive philosophy. And it's not built off the offense. That's not what Andy Reid has done with the Kansas City Chiefs. What he's done is actually said, you know what, honestly, we're going to get more pass coverage guys. We're not going to get run stuffers per se. We're going to get guys that are really good against the pass. We're going to get pass rushers, and we're going to put them in the box, and we're going to get DBs that know how to cover. It's one of the reasons why they went after Tyrann Mathieu, is because he was a safety that you could actually line up in the slot, and he could actually play man and cover somebody, right? He could actually improvise as well if you were going to play robber, where you're going to have him lurking down low looking for any crossing routes. He fit their scheme perfectly to do what? To defend the pass, knowing that they're going to have a lead. With Patrick Mahomes in this offense, they're going to have a lead. Eddie Reed and the Kansas City Chiefs built their defense off of their offense's strength. Rare in the NFL.
And you're right. Kansas City just put a 50-burger on the board in a playoff game. In that second quarter that you cited, they scored 4 touchdowns on 16 plays. Mahomes became, in that game, the first player ever in the postseason to throw for at least 300, run for at least 50, and have 5 touchdown passes
Stunning.
Again. Stunning. So sometimes defense doesn't matter with Kansas City because the offense is so stellar. We'll see if Mike Vrabel, what he has in store for that.
That's something to keep in mind here with the Arizona Cardinals as well,
yeah,
right? You
yeah.
don't have to have the best defense when you have a high-scoring offense. Somewhere in the middle of the pack's good.
Special thanks, Jim Omohundro, Mitch Vareldis, Darren Urban, for Ron Wolfley. I'm Paul Calvisi. This has been the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. We are Santan Ford.
Number one.
You've been listening to the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford in Gilbert. Are you Santan Ford? State Farm. Talk to an agent today at 800-STATE-FARM. And by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcasts. This has been an exclusive presentation of the Arizona Cardinals Football Club.